It is Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a nonprofit organization uses horses to teach elementary students to read. And the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra is wrapping up its 2010-2011 season with one last performance at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville. The concert will feature Mozart's Symphony No. 29 and Requiem.
But first, Washington County officials have been looking into implementing a countywide emergency mass notification system. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Spring storm season is upon us, although we've already experienced plenty of extreme weather so far this year. Our record-setting blizzard with Arctic cold, preceded by a Category EF3 New Year's Eve tornado with over 140 mile-per-hour winds that tore apart homes, farms, and businesses in rural western Washington County. In Cincinnati, population 100, four died, and a half dozen were injured. Cities and some towns have tornado sirens in place, which sound utterly ominous, right? And they work, but they only can be heard from certain distances. And because Washington County is mostly rural, officials for several years have considered purchasing a state-of-the-art emergency alert system. But a few weeks after the Cincinnati tornado, County Judge Marilyn Edwards requested emergency managers facilitate the purchase of a mass emergency notification system for Washington County. Rick Johnson, Deputy Director of Washington County's Department of Emergency Management, is charged with choosing the right one.
Well, of course, we want one that can be used to warn all the citizens of Washington County for severe weather, of course. But also, we would like one that, you know, you could send out an alert to a various section of town about a road that's damaged or a road that's closed. So we'd like to have something that has some diversity with it.
Problem is, lots of businesses are hawking emergency mass notification systems.
We've looked at Code Red, we've looked at Cooper, Global Connect we've looked at, and I've got about two or three more that I want to do webinars with just to see what they have to offer. And once this is done, of course, like I say, there's 20 or 30 companies have contacted us that offer whatever their service is. Some do weather, some do the full notification system, and of course cost is going to be a factor because we want to get a good idea to go back to the judge with and say, Judge, the approximate cost will be somewhere in this range for a county our size.
Code Red uses automatic telephone dialing, which leaves customized emergency messages on home phones. Global Connect is a telephone voice messaging system. Cooper Notification is a lead developer in the mass notification system market. It messages to digital display signage, text messaging, voice calls, desktop alerts, and email notification. None of them are cheap. Benton County reportedly paid $100,000 for Code Red. Springdale, Prairie Grove, Lincoln, and Farmington have adopted a mass notification system. The University of Arkansas also uses the Raise Alert system, which emails and calls all students, staff, and faculty. But Rick Johnson says they will choose an emergency alert vendor only if it's optional for residents to sign on to.
It's interesting, yes. We want, of course, one that will do weather as well as other notification. But also, we would like to have one that if I, as a citizen, do not want to participate, I do not have to. You know, I think it's good for a person to be able to opt out. Yes, we may put everybody in the database at first, but then they could decide, say, I do not want weather alerts. And some people may not. So they need that option to be able to say, I'm going to opt out, and there needs to be a way to do that.
Johnson says he hears from several emergency alert vendors per week. He will present his findings to the quorum court soon.
You know, we want to be able to present to them what we think is a good notification system, or three or four or five, and it may be that we have to do RFPs, request for proposals, do a bid spec and send it out and see what they submit. Because right now, looks like we would probably have to bid a system, you know, put it out on the street and see what people come back with.
For now, residents are encouraged to purchase special weather radios activated by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Unlike the old ones that would fire off storm and tornado warning alerts for the two-state region, the newer NOAA radios use specific alert message encoding, or SAME. So you can program it just for your area. They range in cost from $20 to around $100 or more. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Literacy is a keystone for success. That's what Laura Graves, Southeast Director for the Black Stallion Literacy Foundation, believes. Now in its sixth year in Arkansas, more than 16,000 children in first and fourth grade are enrolled in the program, which promotes literacy through the use of the Black Stallion books by author Walter Farley.
If children can find the joy of reading, and not the work of reading, but the pure joy of letting their imagination soar, and if they can choose to read, then their education level does improve. So that's our goal, is to put a book in the hands of every child in Arkansas. And we are doing that through the Black Stallion Literacy Program by motivating the children with encounters with live horses to love reading as they've met the characters in their books and go on and choose more books to read.
Children participating in the program are each given one of Farley's books to keep. First graders are rewarded by getting to visit a real horse and read their favorite part of the book to the animal. Fourth grade participants get to see a performance by the Arabian Nights from Kissimmee, Florida. The group is scheduled to visit Bentonville April 22nd and Fayetteville April 25th, and at the end of the show, students will get to see characters from the book. The Black Stallion Literacy Foundation was established in 2000 and was brought to Arkansas by Graves and her husband.
We found this program in Florida and asked if we could try it in Arkansas, and we are so proud of our adopted state of Arkansas. We really are so very proud of Arkansas for embracing education. And the enthusiasm that we have seen from our teachers and our principals, our school superintendents, is pretty overwhelming. They truly care about children in Arkansas and are trying to make a difference. And that's pretty overwhelming in itself. And then we have our wonderful volunteers that have said, you know, we want to make a difference too. And they have jumped in and just been so generous with their time and their support and their funds, and we just cannot thank them enough. Walmart's been a tremendous supporter, as has Cargill. So we are so grateful to the wonderful supporters and many, many individuals. Jackie Perry is our Northwest Arkansas coordinator, and Linda Rodekamp is in charge of our first grade program in Northwest Arkansas, and they have given tirelessly, as have all of their volunteers. So we are so grateful to be so blessed with so very many in Arkansas that care.
Northwest Arkansas Director Jackie Perry Ryan helps enroll local schools in the program, as well as secure funding. She explains that the Black Stallion Literacy Foundation pays for half the expenses, so the cost per student is $10. That amount covers both a performance by the Arabian Nights and a copy of the book for the children to keep.
I think what's really one of the most important things is, and I've seen a very big difference, is even in first grade, when people are reading to the students, they're sitting there. But if the student has the book and they can read along with the reader, the students' faces are down reading the words along with the reader. And I just think that makes a world of difference right there, because they're starting to see how those words are being formed, and then they can see the characters or the horse of the book. It is very important that way.
Someone who has shown support for the program is Governor Mike Beebe, who has proclaimed April Black Stallion Literacy Foundation Month. Perry Ryan says the program is able to exist in Northwest Arkansas thanks to the support of several people.
The thing has been taking on such a presence in the area here now that we're starting to get some corporate sponsorships, and that helps a lot too, because, you know, to try to find some community businesses or individuals that wants to donate toward their community here locally to see how their money, their donations are physically being used. And I think that's a huge difference. You know, you can, and that's what I used to do. You know, you get some solicitations in the mail and you send $10 or $20 here and there, and you don't know really what it goes for. No, this is what this really goes for, and these are the hardback books, and you're invited to come out to see how your donation is being used with the students out here in your community. And I think that is the biggest difference. And it's made a world of difference with our sponsorships here, too.
More information on the Black Stallion Literacy Foundation can be found at bslf-online.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. Matthew Henriksen is an advocate for poetry. When he lived in Brooklyn, he hosted poetry readings for other poets often, and through his publishing, he edits the online poetry magazine Typo, he shares works of some of his favorite poets with others. But now he's collected many of his own poems in a new book, Ordinary Sun. Thursday night, he'll read his poems at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Last week, he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about Ordinary Sun. I asked him if it's difficult to place poems in an order for a book.
That's the real torture of putting the book together. You can fix a poem, you can never fix a manuscript to set right, especially if the poems are intended to go together but don't have any sort of thematic or narrative arc that's intended. The poems in my book are broken into subsections that were intended to sit together in a certain way. So about half of the time that I spent reworking the book was spent mostly reordering the poems, and sending the manuscript off to trusted friends multiple times. And this is years, maybe 3 years of doing this. And it's probably it's the one thing that my editors and my publisher got involved in, was also continuing to reorder it. So I'd given up on
really?
Doing it by the time that I'd sent it out, and sent it to a press that I trusted what they would do with it. And what they did with it was different than what the direction I was going in, but really they understood what the poems were about and did some things with it I wouldn't have thought to do. So
they kept all the poems that you intended in each subsection in that subsection. So Gorge, those poems are all?
Gorge is the section that got changed the most.
Really?
That was actually a section of shorter poems that all had titles. And that was probably the most radical suggestion my publisher made, was to make it a sequence. And those poems were actually two sequences that I'd just thrown pieces out over the years. And so that was probably the most drastic change, was that Gorge was originally one poem in that section, and we called it that. So, but yeah.
So when you get, I mean, you knew, of course, before the bound book was going to arrive at your door, that the order.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
This wasn't heavy-handed editing. This was a collaborative process between the publisher and the editor and myself.
Angels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Angels are prevalent here.
I guess they're noticeable. People talk about that and more than the baseball now. I think some of the baseball stuff got dropped out. But, yeah, I mean, that particularly in the one sequence, The Talk, which is the oldest piece in the book. I wrote it when I was in graduate school here, or most of it. And that's another piece that was the titles, which all have an angel in the title, were originally the first lines. And this was more of like a long sequence that was actually part of the section that comes before it. I don't know where they come from. I mean, it's poetry, so you can write about what you want. The angels aren't very ethereal.
Right.
They're pretty human. Those are some of the more base poems in the... I mean, I was definitely thinking about... you know, like pubescent emerging sexuality when I was writing the poems, and The Talk is a reference to that. And so I guess one of the reasons why people might be attracted to them in the book is because they represent something that I think all the poems are after, which is a sort of eternity within the physical world that we live in. And a potentiality for all things to be seen as beautiful and divine. And if you call it an angel, it's an angel. So, and also a lot of those poems are based on, I steal lines from some pieces of literature, some famous and some not, and then distort them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Shakespeare line that some people might recognize that's distorted. So they're distorted angels.
Would you like to read
sure.
something?
Okay, I'll read something short that I usually start readings with. I wasn't planning. Okay, this one. This is my Wallace Stevens poem. sort of. No reality but the ruined idea of a God we speak to. Nat caught in the breath of a dismantled catechism, on a cracked pew in a cathedral by the sea. Restore with your nothing wings the way to where I left my shoes. No imagination but in your tiny, ruptured eyes, which may as well see no thing, before a brain which cannot count, behind the inverted cradle of my hands, which in a moment or two will dispatch what I forget.
Do you remember writing that?
I remember when I wrote this batch of poems, and that this one was written in Brooklyn, and this, like a lot of the poems that I end up gravitating to of my own later on, was a poem that I just had written sort of offhandedly, probably at a coffee shop or a bar somewhere in the neighborhood, and it cast aside as us, nothing to hang on to, just an exercise, but it's stuck around. So
what do you find it? Do you forget about it and then are reminded of it, or?
Well, I can't speak for all poets, but a lot of my poet friends, who are getting their first books out or their second books out or whatever, create 4 or 5 manuscripts worth of material for each manuscript. And there's a lot of casting off. I think it happens less as you go on. It's happening less with me. I'm finding less cast offs, but you don't know what you have, especially you don't know what you have as far as it's going to fit a manuscript until much later. And I know some people who work fast and they put things together intentionally and have this sort of plan for how they're going to write their books, but I don't. A lot of my favorite poets put out a book every 10 years. Mm. So Philip Larkin would be a great example of that. You know, his whole career was 4 books. You have to pay so much attention to the individual poem if you want to make it do certain things, that thinking about a project of 100 pages is so far removed from what you're doing. And I, for one, like to see the larger project emerge out of the smaller poems, especially because the smaller poems deal with the smaller moments. So
I would imagine it'd be intimidating or overwhelming to say, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to come up with a 100-page book of poetry, beginning now.
Well, I think a lot of the poems in here and a lot of the sections in here, that was the intention. Like, oh, I'm going to write, you write one poem and then I'm going to write 80 poems that follow this one in the style, and then maybe you get halfway there and then you end up with 4 or 5 pieces that really work and sit together, and you do something new and you don't think that it fits, but then the next thing puts all 3 of them together in some way. And if you're writing from a center, and my center would have something to do with my own, you know, personal existence, if you're writing from the same place, then you have something that holds it together. And you don't have to know what it is. But definitely that comes to you after the fact.
Do you mind reading Yard Work?
Of course.
I really like that.
This is one of those poems that was part of one of those massive projects that I conceived that eventually ran out of steam. Yard Work. The whisper lasted several hours in the blade chamber, and the bleeding slowed. That Saturday was the longest, and now it's over. When you come back, I'll be behind the barn stacking sticks again, singing, stay, stay, stay. Damn bones, bird bones, brain-boned mocking song leaking light along a sheaf of lawn, razor-clipped answer to Anant's prayer.
I love that last line.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love the word nonce.
Yeah, I do too.
And I had never thought of it in the context with prayer. This is definitely one of the poems in the book that was written in a fury, and I was trying to let language sort of rise subconsciously or whatever that might mean, and not so much questioning what I was doing. Of course, this poem's heavily revised. It was completely different when I wrote it, but I got these lines out of it that are like the other lines in that section. I went to a parochial. I went to a Lutheran school when I was in elementary school, and so the prayer and things like that always kind of just rise to the surface. And nonce, of course, meaning, you know, we use it to refer to, say, a poetic prosodic form that hasn't been used before. So it's only been used once. So an invented form. At one point, a sonnet was a nonce form. And then it wasn't when someone else did it again.
Matthew Henriksen of Fayetteville has a new book of poetry. It's titled Ordinary Sun. He'll read his work Thursday night, beginning at 7, at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And there's much more from our conversation, including what three of Matt's favorite things have in common: poetry, jazz, and baseball. You can find that at OzarksAtLarge.com.
It is April 20th, 2011, and this is Ozarks at Large. For the third straight month, officials at state and federal agencies say unemployment figures in Arkansas remain unchanged. Kimberly Friedman works with the Arkansas Department of Workforce Services.
Arkansas' seasonally adjusted unemployment rate did remain constant in March at 7.8%. Arkansas's rate a year ago, looking at March 2010, the rate was 7.9%, so we're just actually down 0.1 percentage point from where we were a year ago.
Friedman says that's a full percentage point less than the national rate of 8.8%, and Arkansas is continuing to grow, with 19,100 more workers employed in March of this year than this time last year.
Small businesses in Oklahoma and Benton County, Arkansas, that suffered damages in this winter's record-breaking snow might be eligible for low-interest loans through the Small Business Administration. The agency says it has declared a disaster area in several central and eastern Oklahoma counties after snowfall totals of more than 2 feet fell in February. An SBA spokesperson says businesses in the affected areas, and that includes Benton County and Arkansas, could be eligible for loans up to $2 million. 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack is scheduled to tour the Arkansas Nuclear One facility near Russellville this week. The 3-hour tour is scheduled for tomorrow afternoon. He is scheduled to also make stops in Fort Smith, Greenwood, and Fayetteville through Saturday.
The man who is credited with blowing the whistle on fraud at AIG will speak on the University of Arkansas campus next week. Gordon Massey is a former manager for the American International Group. In 2005, he contacted federal regulators about incidents of alleged fraud and malfeasance at AIG. He is the author of The Whistleblower's Dilemma, Confronting Fraud with AIG, and is scheduled to talk Thursday afternoon, April 28th, at Willard J. Walker Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. The Fayetteville Animal Shelter recently renovated the puppy nursery area at their facility on South Armstrong Avenue. The renovation was made possible by a $25,000 gift by the late Catherine Scott, a longtime supporter of the shelter and the Humane Society of the Ozarks. Justine Middleton, Animal Service Superintendent, says the gift has facilitated more efficient use of the space previously available for puppies.
We used all $25,000. What we actually had to do part of that was demolition because we took out the pens that were in there. We totally took those out. We re-poured the floor, re-poured the concrete floor to slope to the back of the room. And then the bulk of the money was spent on the new kennel system that went in, which is actually a double-decker system. So we have puppies on top and on bottom. And it gives them more room to play and relax and just, enjoy being a puppy. So it was, and we also did some acoustical ceiling tiles to help on the acoustics in that room because it can get very loud in the shelter. So it can be stressful on the puppies to have to be around that noise all the time. And we also put in a new air filter system.
Visitors are now welcome to go inside the puppy room, but the no-touching rule is still in place to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. The new glass-fronted cages allow potential adopters or foster parents better interaction with puppies. Apart from this improvement, the shelter is also in the process of putting together a cookbook to benefit the shelter's cause. Interested individuals can mail their recipes to 1640 South Armstrong Avenue, Fayetteville, Arkansas, 72701.
The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will return to SEC play this weekend after defeating Oral Roberts University 6-5 last night in Tulsa. Arkansas is now 26-9 this year, tied for first in the SEC West. The Razorbacks will face Kentucky in Lexington for three games this weekend. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals have tonight off. Then they'll return to Arvest Stadium in Springdale to begin a four-game series with the Arkansas Travelers on Thursday night. The Nats lost last night in Corpus Christi, but they're still in first place in the Texas League's North Division.
And the Ozark Headwaters Group Sierra Club, the Omni Climate Change Task Force, and the Green Economy Group will host a roundtable discussion tonight on local initiatives that address climate change. The discussion, scheduled to begin at 6, will take place at the Fayetteville Public Library. Also tonight, a panel discussion dedicated to the role of public transportation in Northwest Arkansas is scheduled to begin at 6:30 at the Washington Regional Education Center in Fayetteville. Both discussions are free and open to the public.
It's Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And they're crazy, and I'm fine. Really. Really, I'm fine. We're going to talk about bunnies.
Because it's close to Easter.
Well, actually, we're going to talk about an open night and poetry slam tonight, and then we'll talk about bunnies.
Okay.
The poetry slam features poet Andrea Gibson, and it's at 7 o'clock at RZ's Coffee House on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville.
Most stuff at RZ's is free?
It is free. There's a poetry slam. There's her performance. There's an open mic.
You know, I don't know who puts together the RZ's schedule throughout the year, but this year, not that they've been bad in the
past.
Well,
they have a coffee house committee, one of the students run.
Well, tip of the hat, because this year it's been a great schedule.
Right, because Joe Purdy was there the 6th.
Right.
That was great.
That was.
So there you go. But we're also going to look ahead, because Easter is Sunday.
Yes.
And so, of course, we had a whole raft of egg hunts last weekend. We have a whole raft of egg hunts coming up this weekend. On Saturday, we have an egg hunt with more than 12,000 eggs. 40,000 has been the high of these listings,
right.
But this one has more than 12,000 at 10 a.m. at Reardon Hall in Bella Vista, ages 12 and younger. They never let me go. The Easter egg roundup of the Ozarks.
Right.
For age groups from toddler to 11 and older.
Mm-hmm.
They might let me go to that one.
Yeah.
It starts at 11 Saturday at Parsons Stadium in Springdale, sponsored obviously by Rodeo of the Ozarks.
Right.
Perfect.
There is an egg hunt followed by lunch at 11 Saturday at First Presbyterian Church in Springdale. And a doggy Easter parade from 1 to 3 on Saturday with cutest, ugliest costume and look-alike contests.
So, like, doggies with, like, the ears, the rabbit ears?
Easter bunny hats and, yeah.
Okay.
It starts at 1 o'clock at J.B. Hunt Park in Springdale, and it's a $15 entry fee for petsake.org.
Perfect.
And then on Sunday, the Easter Bell Parade is at noon in Eureka Springs. And you can find out more about that by calling 703-400-6090.
And if you go online, you can find plenty of sunrise services in the area on Sunday morning as well.
I think I'm going to have to take the new puppy to the Easter Parade.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
The Arkansas State Hospital is under investigation. There have been allegations of abuse of patients. Kelly McNeil has this report from Little Rock.
Documents showed the hospital almost lost its status as a Medicare provider this week because officials found conditions they say put patients in immediate jeopardy of serious harm or death. Dana McLean, the attorney for the Disability Rights Center of Arkansas, says the main problem is that the hospital is designed to deal mainly with mentally ill patients. She says staff can't deal properly with children who also have developmental disabilities. McLean says surveillance video shows what she calls abuse.
We saw a kid that took a sweater off the back of a nurse's chair, and the state hospital interpreted that as a form of aggression. This kid was then grabbed by several staff members and taken into a seclusion room where he was continually screaming, probably a good half an hour, asking for his mom. You know, the staff made fun of him.
Julie Munsell, spokesperson for the State Department of Human Services, doesn't deny that mistreatment occurred. But she says administrators discovered it themselves before the federal government got involved.
We've acknowledged that some of the treatment by the staff, in particular the way direct care staff interacted and spoke to children on that unit, was unacceptable.
Two staff members have been terminated since then, one disciplined, and eight are still on administrative leave. The federal government has given the state an extension until May to work on correcting the problems.
Kelly McNeil from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock filed that report. Saturday night, the 2010-2011 season will come to a conclusion for the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. The APO's first season has already been an eclectic one. There was the ambitious holiday concert that married Duke Ellington and the Nutcracker, and more recently, a concert devoted to the role of classical music in cartoons. The orchestra will end with a flourish Saturday night at Arend Art Center in Bentonville. It's a Mozart-laden program that will include the composer's Requiem. Conductor Stephen Bias says after deciding on the Requiem, he had to figure out the rest of the night's works.
I wanted to find something to balance the first half of the program with this massive monumental work on the second half. And Mozart, in his evolution, in his compositional evolution, went through so many different styles personally. Now, to a non-trained ear, Mozart is going to sound like Mozart, whether it was something he wrote when he was 12 or there in his early 30s, right before he died. Nevertheless, I love Mozart. He's always been one of my favorite composers. And when we are programming concerts with the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra or any other orchestra that I conduct, it's often a desire to use something with a full symphony orchestra. So having these reduced forces, which are required for the Requiem, gives me the opportunity to choose something for a smaller orchestra, and to me it's a grand invitation to look for some other Mozart. I chose the Symphony No. 29 because it, in my opinion, is his first major symphonic winner. Of course he wrote, I mean it's amazing to think at the age of 18, mm-hmm. Mozart had already written 28 other symphonies before this time. But with the exception of maybe the 25th Symphony, which was written only 5 months before the 29th Symphony, we don't hear the sort of depth that became the wonder that was late Mozart in his symphonic writings, those things that go toward Beethoven's style. The early Mozart symphonies were almost like Italian overtures, very short, some as short as 10 minutes long. But this symphony, number 29, is the first example in the symphonic output that really has the scope and the breadth and the depth, in my opinion, that was to be the signature of the late symphonic style of Mozart. And it's just, it's wonderful, and it shows what he can do with a small band. I mean, it's strings, two oboes, and two horns, yet the first movement begins very softly, which is unusual for the symphonies in those days. The audience was accustomed to having something that would rouse their attention into place. But the second movement, this beautiful andante, uses muted strings, which was not new for Mozart. But the colors that he creates and the progression of the melody through the movement are brilliant. And at the points where he uses the two oboes and the two horns as a quartet are reflective of some of the most wonderful things that he does in his operatic writing later. So it really does begin this final phase of his symphonic development. And besides, I just simply love the 29th Symphony. And to me, that's a great balance for the very weighty Requiem on the second half.
Well, yes. I mean, here you have this, relatively speaking, this reduced band, as you say, in the first half of the program. And then you have 200 voices, and you have this grand majesty. Quite a difference. What does that mean for you and the musicians? Or is it another day at work? Okay, smaller band here, intermission, big.
I have a penchant for equating music with food, mm-hmm. and because I love them both desperately. But this the beginning program, and I should mention that at the very beginning of the program, the Schola Cantorum from the University of Arkansas, who are performing as part of the chorus on the second half of the program, will sing an a cappella work by Augusta Reed Thomas, a distinguished composer who is in residence in Fayetteville at the university. She wrote a 3-minute work called Alleluia, and it's also a delightful work linking to the sacred nature of the second half of the Requiem. So we begin with that, and then the lighter but very rich Symphony No. 29, but it's a great balance. Too much of a good thing would be too weighty, either in light music or very serious and deep music. But it really does provide what I consider to be a wonderful balance from this fresh, effervescent Symphony No. 29 to the very severe, in many ways, Requiem. Now, of course, most people are familiar with the exciting moments and the very dark, serious moments of the Requiem, but there are sublime moments that, again, connect to some of the writing, not really in his symphonic writing so much from the Requiem, but to his operatic writing in the second act of Magic Flute and Zarastro's hymn-like music. It's interesting to think about the Requiem being almost void of vocal virtuosity. The writing for the vocal soloist quartet is always as a unit, with the exception of the baritone that sings at the beginning of the Tuba Mirum, which there are reasons why that is a single voice. But the writing, both chorally for the solo vocal quartet and the orchestra, tends to be almost hymn-like in nature, where there is an avoidance of any sort of show or overt show of virtuosity. And as the Requiem begins with this very gentle and rather velvety darkness, the orchestra emerges almost like sunshine. And you'll forgive my analogies and metaphors, but I just, it is a journey, not only because we begin and end with almost the same music in the Requiem, but we really go through the gamut of emotions, compositional output, melodic and harmonic development.
In rehearsal or performance, when you have a large number of voices, do you have to professionally consider that a single instrument, the chorus, or is it nuanced and you think of it as a multifaceted number of instruments?
Outstanding question. The answer is both. Mm. Certainly, the chorus must function as a single unit. If it's in four parts, in two parts, if it's unison, it must function as one. And often it is an element of the sonority that is considered a voice. The contrapuntal nature of some of the writing in the Requiem requires that there are four distinct voices, and often all four of them highly ornamented, or at least florid, I should say, and they must be taken separately. If they're doubled with the orchestra, then we have the doubling of a solo voice. But sometimes in the busiest parts, musically speaking, of the Requiem, with all of the instruments doubling the voices or coming in and out and supporting certain parts of the phrase, we will only have four distinct voices, whether it's being doubled by the violin and the oboes or clarinets in the Requiem, or if it's just voices. And it really does shift constantly. It's one of the wonders of Mozart that he can come in and out of a massive full orchestral and choral sonority down to something that's very intimate, but still the same number of voices are present.
Finally, shifting gears a little bit, this will put the final note on this season for the Arkansas Philharmonic. Looking back, what do you think, and what can we expect when fall 2011 rolls around?
I must say, and of course I'm partial to the Arkansas Philharmonic, but I must say that the season has been an extraordinary and a resounding success. We wanted to present four concerts that were each dynamically different in their intent to reflect the mission of the orchestra. And I should say, the Arkansas Philharmonic is a professional orchestra, not a community orchestra or a civic orchestra. I don't think those titles mean anything to anyone outside the music business, but it is a professional orchestra with a keen and very strong commitment to the community. We created four concerts this year that would reflect the sort of concerts we thought would attach to the community. One with a Russian violinist at the beginning of the year, just one of the most wonderful talents on the planet these days, Alexander Markov. which was a big success. Our holiday program combined with the Ozark Bronze Handbell Choir, but also the Fayetteville Jazz Collective for this Tchaikovsky and Duke Ellington Nutcracker. Which,
a completely ambitious
and it was a, it was,
performance.
It was really a wonderful success. We sold out to the Air and Arts Center, and it put us on the map with people that really were unaware that the Arkansas Philharmonic existed. In February, our concert was delayed because of that nasty little snowstorm that came through, but we repeated the first weekend in March, a Cartoon Classics, a family concert that played symphonic masterworks, including some very challenging things like Stravinsky's Firebird, the Overture to the Barber of Seville and such, and then showed the correlation and collaboration with these animation artists who created a new art form. And this last concert with the orchestra and a chorus is another facet of doing something very different to explore what it is that is suitable to this region and this community. I think to be dynamically connected to the community is one thing, but to also be involved in the creation of a music organization requires that we talk to the public. We really understand what it is that they desire to hear and to see and to support. And we've done that and gotten some tremendous, tremendously wonderful feedback, but most of all, support. It has been overwhelming how positive people have been to us, and we are doing outreach. We've begun our outreach program. Tomorrow we're taking part of the Arkansas Philharmonic to Branson, Missouri, to collaborate with a group from Springfield, Missouri. And that is the beginning of our season, not only in scope, but also in the outreach to this entire Northwest Arkansas region and beyond into other states. So I'm delighted. I really can say, on behalf of the Arkansas Philharmonic, it has been a stupendously successful year, and I'm excited for 2011-2012.
April 23rd is the final concert of this season. People can go online, arkansasphilharmonic.org.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Stephen Bias is the conductor of the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. The orchestra concludes its first season Saturday night at the Air and Arts Center in Bentonville. The concert begins at 7:30, and in just a moment on Ozarks at Large, an opportunity for you to win two tickets to that concert. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Time for a trivia question.
Our giveaway.
Our giveaway, yes. Tickets today. Two tickets to the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra performance on the 23rd.
Mm-hmm. At Air and Arts Center in Bentonville.
That's correct. We just heard about part of the program. And, of course, it is a Mozart-heavy program this time to close out the 2010-2011 season. So the question today is
about Mozart.
And it is, how old was Mozart when he was commissioned to write his first opera? Was he 10? Was he 14? Was he 19?
So young.
Yes, no matter what the right answer is there. So again, how old was Mozart when he was commissioned? That meant someone asked him to. He didn't just write it, right? When he was commissioned to write his first opera, 10, 14, or 19?
If you have a guess or the correct answer, call 1-800-522-5823.
That's right. And all correct answers will then be placed into the ceramic cow.
Yes.
And we will pull one winner out for two tickets to the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra on the 23rd. And time now for the answer to our question. It involved Mozart because Mozart is prominent on the program for the last concert for the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra on the 23rd. The question, at what age was Mozart when he was first commissioned to write an opera? 10, 14, or 19?
The answer is 14.
Very young.
Yeah.
Not 10.
But still quite young. I don't even think I knew how to drive at that point.
Oh, I didn't. We will pick a winner out of all the correct answers in a few minutes and then give you a call. Yesterday.
Yes. Our winner was Rebecca Buchanan.
Rebecca Buchanan knew another larger-than-life character, Mozart, today, and yesterday was Stefano D'Amira.
Yes, one of my favorite larger-than-life characters.
A villain on Days of Our Lives. The one way he had not died yesterday was
falling down an elevator shaft.
So congratulations, Rebecca Buchanan. Thanks for listening. We'll have another question tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And this reminder, KUAF offers several different signals for you to enjoy, even more ways for you to enjoy them. You probably, well, you are aware of 91.3 FM. You're listening to it right now. But we offer a couple of other signals, KUAF2, which is a 24-hour-a-day classical music channel, and KUAF3, a channel that's devoted to news and talk programs that you can't hear here, things like Diane Rehm, the BBC, and the Bob Edwards Weekend Show. These signals, as well as a digital version of our FM broadcast, can be heard any number of ways. You can tune in for free with any HD radio or internet radio. You can listen online for free with the new KUAF pop-up player. You can listen for free via your Android phone with the NPR News app, or you can listen for free with the new KUAF iPhone app for iPhone and iPod Touch users. More information available at KUAF.com.
You can pick up your Washington County map today at KUAF Public Radio. This year's map features a full city map of Fayetteville. The 2011 Washington County map is available at KUAF, located at 9 South School in Fayetteville, just inside the lobby.
Got about 40 of those left.
That many?
Just about.
Okay.
The Art Experience Incorporated will host a 7-week art course titled Masks for Change, a personal growth group, April 23rd through June 4th. Classes will meet from 10 until 11:30 a.m. The class uses the metaphor of the mask as a way to look at our own lives. It will include work with art materials, journaling, sound, and movement. The Art Experience is at 641 West Martin Luther King Boulevard in Fayetteville. For more information, you can go online to theartexperience.org or call 442-0557.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Sonora, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Another brand new show tomorrow at noon. Thanks for listening. Thank you.